Today's show is brought to you by LinkedIn Made Simple. There's no doubt LinkedIn is an essential platform for businesses and business professionals to capture leads, jobs, and referrals. But let's face it, LinkedIn is still very confusing to many. I mean, what do you do on LinkedIn anyway? The good news is it doesn't have to be this way. You can go from clueless to conquering the platform quicker than you think with LinkedIn Made Simple. LinkedIn Made Simple is a step-by-step video-based online course that guides you through the exact steps you need to effectively use LinkedIn so your brand can flourish. So whether you're a job seeker looking for a new role, an executive looking to boost your profile, or a business looking to up your game on LinkedIn, LinkedIn Made Simple will help you achieve your LinkedIn goals. Check out LinkedInMadeSimple.com and enroll today. Hello and welcome to the Brand New You Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you clearly and confidently build and market your brand so you flourish. I'm your host, Ryan Roten, and today's guest is Claudia Williams, founder of The Human Zone. At The Human Zone, Claudia provides her clients HR-based consulting and support from people management to recruiting, hiring, onboarding, performance management, and succession planning. Claudia is also a recovering attorney, a TEDx and keynote speaker, Vistage Chair, leadership mentor, and author of the book, Frentorship. Claudia, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the Brand New You Show.
Thank you so much, Ryan. It's great to be here.
I'm excited to have you on here. And before I get started with most of my podcasts, all of my podcasts, I have one question that I like to ask everybody, but I'm not going to ask that question of you today. Instead, I'm going to ask a different question that is very relevant and timely, which is, if you could write something on a billboard for the world to see, what would you say?
My billboard would say, what one thing would you be doing right now if you could be doing that one thing?
Okay. And what would that one thing be for you?
Talking to you, of course.
Okay, there you go. So it's timely and relevant because this is a post that you just put out this morning.
Yeah, man, that was really, you are on top of things.
Yes, future guests, pay attention to what you post the day before or the day of our podcast interview.
That's right, because I know your one question, and I was all prepared to tell you that I would be sipping wine in Tuscany somewhere. So I listen, I pay attention.
I was going to ask you that question next anyway. So Tuscany, Italy.
Yes, that is my happy place in my mind. That was my dream trip that I took 5 years ago now, 6 years ago now. Florence is my favorite city so far that I've been to in Italy, but we had this really awesome tour that we did with a woman who moved from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to Italy 25 years ago, and now she does wine tours through Tuscany. And one of the days we were there, she just took us on this really intimate tour. It was my husband and me, and we got to meet the winemakers and these really small but wonderful wineries. And that was just one of those things where if I could go back and do that over and over and over again, that would be my Groundhog Day perfection.
I understand that there's some congratulations that are in order here. You've been in business now for 5 years, right?
Yes, thank you.
That's awesome.
Yes, I feel like it's this last year was the ultimate turning point for me. And I feel like I hit the mark now where I officially will never be someone's employee again.
Okay.
Right. So barring some unforeseen circumstance, something really horrible and unforeseen happening, I think I'm in this whole self-employed gig for good.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Now, you weren't always self-employed. Obviously, you were a corporate employee before, and specifically an attorney.
Yes.
You tell a story in your book, which we're going to talk about your book here in a little bit, about kind of your catalyst moment, your inciting incident, if you will, that moment where you started to go, wait a minute, is this really all there is, like this whole work thing? Can you tell that story about that moment that was inspired by your daughter?
Sure. I was a corporate attorney, and I was working for the Hershey Company at the time, which was a great experience. I learned a ton, but it also involved a lot of international travel. And in my world, it was often relatively unplanned travel. So I had just gotten back from a trip to China, and my boss said, "Hey, we need to go to China." I said, "Hey, I was just there." So I needed to turn around within a couple of weeks and head back to Dubai and China. So it was 6:30 in the morning, and I was standing in my driveway with my husband and my two daughters at the time, who were 7 and 9. And the car with my boss was pulling into the driveway. And so my boss got out of the car, and she was coming to meet my daughters for the first time. So she came over, and I introduced them, and my 7-year-old looked up at her without skipping a beat and said, "So you're the reason my mama's never home." And I thought, oh gosh, this is going to be a really long drive from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to Dulles to the airport. And then a really long 10 days in China with my boss after that statement. But I thought about it, and I realized, you know, my boss wasn't the reason I was never home. I was working a ton, and there was nothing wrong with that. That's what the job needed from me. But it really got me to thinking about whether that's what I wanted at that particular time in my life. And so it was just, it was a catalyst moment for me in thinking about what I wanted to be doing, how I wanted to be spending my time, and what was bringing me joy and what options I had. And that's when I really started thinking about what was next for me.
Yeah. Your story reminds me so much of kind of, it's very similar to mine. I had a same, not China trip, but just another trip to somewhere else. And my oldest son, who's now 21, was like 5 at the time. And he just looked up at me and said, "Daddy, don't go." Mm. And you know, that was the moment where you don't think about, like, you're just working, and you don't think about how your work, the impact of what you do has on others. And so that wasn't like a turning point for me where I said, okay, where do I go from here? But it was definitely a wake up call for the amount of travel and things that I was doing. So I relate to that story every time I read it in your book, or I hear you tell it somewhere else. Mm. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening too, who can relate to something very similar to that, because, you know, at some point work does start to become kind of all encompassing. And if you don't take time to kind of think about what you're doing and where you're going, you just keep doing the same things over and over and not realize the impact you're having on others.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool you realize it. And then you started to really think about, okay, where do I go from here? Where do I, you know, and now here you are 5 years later.
Yes.
And so I'm curious, now that you're, you know, last year was a kind of a pivotal year for you, you said a minute ago. Prior to that, as you're going through kind of figuring out this whole entrepreneurial journey, what were some of the biggest surprises for you as you were getting started and trying to get your business moving forward?
I think one of the biggest surprises for me was how many times I would be tempted to take a job because it seemed so much easier to have predictable income than to be on this roller coaster of self-employment. And I have to say, I am an impulsive but calculated risk taker. That's my nature. And my husband is a steady Eddie. Just, we're in different risk categories altogether. And so when I told him that I think I really want to do this gig and I want to start a business, he was like, "All right, well, let's sit down and build a 3-year plan, and we'll map this all out, and let's see how much money we need to have and savings and how much you really want to have for startup costs." And I just sat there and nodded my head. Like, it was the most painful conversation I could possibly be having. And I called him a couple of weeks later and said, "That 3-year plan, it's 3 months because I gave my notice and I'm just doing this thing." And I thought I had to go buy a portable AED machine for him. But for me, in my mind, I had done the complete calculation because I could go back to practicing law at any moment.
Right.
I knew I could always be a lawyer, and I knew I had great relationships with my former law firm. It just didn't seem like a huge risk to me at the time. But once I got into it and I didn't have a steady paycheck anymore, and I had some great clients, and fortunately they really liked my work, and they liked it so much, they said, "Please just come work for us. Just come be our full-time employee. Come be our head of HR. And it was really, really tempting to get a regular paycheck. But I knew deep down it's not really what I wanted to do. So I struggled with that every time that opportunity came up. And in the first 3 years, it came up once and sometimes twice a year. That was hard. And those were some tough conversations because even my husband, you know, the temptation of, well, look, if this is what you really want to do, that's great. But if you don't want to do that, then you're going to be miserable. And I'd rather you not be miserable. So I'm glad that he had the wherewithal to have the right conversation with me about it. And that I had a great business coach who had good conversations with me about it. And I was a member of a Vistage group and they had good conversations with me about it. So I'm fortunate that I had great sounding boards who helped me stay the course, because I'm not sure I'd be sitting here today having this conversation with you if I didn't.
Yeah. I feel like I've said this 100 times in the last 2 or 3 months, but the people you surround yourself with, like that old saying, the 5 books and the 5 people you hang out with, they're so critical to helping you get where you want to go. And if you don't have the right people with you and the right people in your corner, when you're trying to make that transition, it's super easy for you to go, maybe I should go back to the steady paycheck. Because it's honestly, it's the easier path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm certain I'd be miserable.
Yeah. And I know for me, there were times it's not just the revenue piece, but there were also times where like, I don't know if you ever did this, maybe I was weird, but I would wake up or just during the course of a day, a thought would pop in my head about some report or something that I used to have to do when I was in my corporate job. And that my mind would say, hey, have you done that yet? And then I would have to like stop and remind myself that I don't have to do that anymore because I don't work there.
Mm-hmm.
Did anything like that ever happen to you too?
Yes. Well, when I first went from tracking my life in 6-minute increments as a billable attorney, and I didn't have to do that anymore. It took me a long time to get out of that habit. And yes, the little things that I didn't have to do, it takes a long time to untrain your brain. Mm-hmm. Yes. But then the flip side of that is that there were things I had to train my brain to do that I never had to do before, like get my invoices out to my clients and pay my bills. And so there were other things I had to train myself to do that weren't necessarily part of my DNA that were now part of my business person DNA.
Yeah. Sales, prospecting, pay your taxes.
Yes. Yes. So
marketing,
all this, yes, doing this.
Networking, branding.
Yes. So fortunately, that's where I met you. And yep. you were kind enough to respond to a random message to me on LinkedIn. And you were really instrumental in those early days in my business of helping me get all that branding stuff in order. It's kind of like I knew I could talk about what I was doing, but I didn't know how to put those pieces together. And you were really instrumental in those early days for me.
You know, when you get started, you just have to kind of start and you kind of have this idea of where you think you want things to go. And what I've found, you tell me, I mean, it sounds like you found your stride in the last year, but your first few years in business, you're helping people, you're serving people, but you're still kind of searching for yourself and your niche and what you want to do specifically. And I'm wondering, what was it like last year? What was that big catalyst change for you that, you know, you're now pretty confident that you can maintain the self-employment thing?
The pivot for me started in June of 2018. It turned out I had been experiencing agonizing nerve pain down my arms, numbness, tingling for over a year. And when they finally got the diagnosis correct, it turned out that my brain stem was abnormally large and it was growing down into my spinal canal and putting pressure on my spinal cord. And it's something called a Chiari malformation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So for me, it was scientific proof that I'm smarter than all of my sisters. Right. So I finally had scientific proof that I have a big brain.
You have to be. You're quite the golfer too, is from what I understand. So.
So I had what's called a decompression surgery, where they go in and they remove a piece of your skull and a piece of your C1 disc, and they put a stretchy material in there to hold your extra big brainstem in place. And what that did was it forced me to stop. So I just everything kind of just went on hold for 2 weeks. I really did nothing. And for the better part of 2 months, I was just kind of slow. Everything slowed down. And it made me stop and think about what I was doing, why I was doing it, what I really wanted to do. And over the course of that time, I said, I really want to keep doing this. And so the summer of 2018 through the beginning of 2019, I started to put the wheels in motion and said, I really want to continue to do coaching, really want to build up my business, and I really want to stay in this workplace training and speaking space. And so what am I going to do to make all of this happen? And that's when my Vistage chair, John Dame, said, and he'd been on me for a little while, but he said, you really should consider becoming a Vistage chair. And what sent me over the edge was when he had me substitute chair for him when he couldn't be at one of his meetings. And I loved it. And so I decided to become a Vistage chair myself. And what that has done for me was not only did it put me in exactly the space I love to be in, because I get to coach and mentor and work with business owners and senior executives of companies doing all the things I love to do, but it takes a little bit of that roller coaster ride of consulting out and gives me some predictability in terms of revenue and income, doing exactly what I love to do. And I still get to do all of the things, the training and the speaking pieces of my business that I love to do. So it's like taking the deep breath and letting all of the air out. And I know people are listening and they can't see my face, but there's this gigantic smile. It's exactly the thing that I wish I did if I had done it, like that whole, why didn't I think of this sooner kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just the perfect extension of my business, working with great people, doing the work I love to do, and eliminating the fear factor of what's this month going to be like and what's this month going to be like, and making things even keeled for me, which is important to me.
Yeah. I think you said something there that I think is really important, which is you decided that this was what you wanted to do. And I think a lot of those first few years, especially if you go from being a corporate employee where, you know, your calendar, your schedule, your day, everything is like laid out for you. And when you go from that to, okay, now I got to like do all this other stuff. And there's still that temptation of, well, I could go back and get a job and all this other stuff. But until you make that decision that says, this is what I'm going to do, I think you always continue to struggle with that. You have to kind of decide, okay, here's what I'm doing, and move in that direction. And then it takes away a lot of those other temptations.
And I think, and I reflected a lot, and I think there was something holding me back. And I think it's something that holds a lot of people back. And it's the idea of, well, I can't do that because I won't be good enough. Mm-hmm. Right. So call it imposter syndrome, call it whatever you want to call it. But a lot of Vistage chairs, or maybe even most Vistage chairs, are retired CEOs. And I don't fit the typical model or mold of who a Vistage chair is. And I think it's the thing that holds a lot of people back from maybe doing what they really want to do. And it's the fear of, I won't be good enough, or I'm not good enough, or I can't do that. And ultimately, I think if it's what you really want to do, well, you find out you're pretty darn good at it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Just for clarity, for those who may not know, what is Vistage?
Vistage is a worldwide organization. It's been around for over 60 years. And what it is peer advisory boards. So every month, groups of CEOs, senior executives from non-competitive industries get together and they help each other solve problems, business problems, personal problems, super confidential settings. It's the whole idea that, you know, it gets kind of lonely at the top and you never know who has an agenda. And so it's the one place where people with completely unbiased opinions, thoughts, feelings, no agenda, get together with no agenda other than, let's just help each other solve problems.
Yeah, that's you said something there that's going to give me a segue into what we're going to talk about next, which is your book. But real quick, do you like what what do I need to be, or who do I need to be to become a member of Vistage?
You just need to be either the owner, president, CEO of a company, or a leader in an organization.
Okay.
Or you could actually, Vistage has multiple levels and different kinds of groups. So if having a group of peers to help you is something that sounds appealing, you can check it out at vistage.com. There are trusted advisors groups, which is groups of, think of professionals like accountants or attorneys. So there are groups of trusted advisors. There are groups for emerging leaders. So if you're looking for a professional development opportunity, there's a group for you. So there are all kinds of groups. So you can learn all about the different groups.
Okay, cool. And so as a chair, I assume you're leading or organizing activities within a certain area or region.
Yes. So I'm in Harrisburg, PA. So the greater South Central Pennsylvania area.
Okay.
And I'm the facilitator of the group. So not only do we meet once a month, but I also do one-to-one executive coaching sessions with the members of groups as well.
So if you are in that boat and you're one of those people who are in an area where you might need some mentorship or coaching or leadership or friendship, I think you know where I'm going with this.
I think I do.
Check out the a Vistage group near you. But you said something there that I'm going to use as a segue to move into the discussion of your book, which, by the way, is really, really good.
Thank you.
It's just really compelling. And one of the things that you said was it can be lonely at the top. So as I move into now the discussion about your book, Friendship, you say in there, I'm going to quote this because I love this quote. Best practices are someone else's past practices, and you call friendship the next practice. So in your words, let's start with, what is friendship to you?
To me, friendship is a movement. It is the idea that society that is one click away from everything, and we need to get back to some of the basics around how we really connect with people, and that relationships are the things that will separate the good companies from the really great ones. And what I see happening is that the pendulum kind of shifted one way to, we have to really, really nail down our systems and our processes and our technology. And that's all good. And companies have done a phenomenal job at that. But in doing so, they kind of lost sight of one really, really important thing, which is their people. And that's when we saw the revolving doors. And it was, we're going to get as much as we can out of our people. And when they get tired or they don't like it anymore, there's the door, because there's a line of people just waiting. We'll get as much as we can, and then we'll find another person. And you know what? They can't do that anymore, because unemployment is really, really low, and they can't find people, and they can't keep people anymore, because when people get tired of that, there's another company waiting for really great people. And so now companies are taking a step back and saying, hold on, we have to do better. We have to do better by our people. Plus, we have all of this information now that people are really, really lonely. And we have anxiety and depression rates going through the roof, particularly with millennials, who will make up the majority of the workforce in just a few years here. So we have to find better ways to connect on a human level. And that's what friendship is all about. It's about finding the really simple, not expensive at all ways to reconnect on a human level. And that's what's going to keep people inside the doors of a company. That's what's going to keep people connected at work. That's what's going to get them engaged and being innovative and collaborative, doing all the things that companies need them to be productive and happy and healthy. And that's ultimately what's going to lead to all the business results they need. That's the ultimate outcome. The companies need the results, but the people need the people.
Right. Yeah. So friendship is a mixture, a combination, a Venn diagram of friendship, mentorship, and leadership. I want to talk about each one individually, but you said something a minute ago that I don't think most people think about, which is CEOs are lonely. It can be lonely at the top. And I don't think people really think about employment or even CEOs in that way. But is it like, how can people be lonely at work when they're surrounded by other people?
Well, so for CEOs in particular, over half of CEOs report feeling lonely. They feel like the higher people get up in leadership levels in particular, the less they feel like they have an ability to talk to people and to get trustworthy feedback and input. And there is data out there. And former U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy actually has a whole report that was in the Harvard Business Review back in 2017 about it. And there's been follow-up research since then that supports this idea that, yep, CEOs say, yeah, it's kind of lonely because we're not sure who we can trust and who we can talk to. And so we're not sure if we're getting actual real feedback from people, if they're just kind of, you know, telling us what we want to hear. And over half of American adults over the age of 45 say, yeah, it's lonely. Like, we come in, we do our job, we don't really have anybody to talk to, or we don't trust people because we're not sure who's out to get us. Or, you know, people work in places where information is treated like currency, something that's traded to get the next good job versus information that's something to be shared for the betterment of everyone in the organization, because that's just the good thing to do. So it's a trust thing. It's a respect thing. And that's where companies are struggling.
Yeah. So when I was an employee, we did the Gallup strengths thing, which I could have a whole separate discussion about that, but we won't go there today. But there is a question that they ask on every single time I took it, which is, do you have a best friend at work? Which the first year it came out, nobody knew what it meant. So yep. There had to be coaching around how to answer that for the second year. But do you need a best friend at work? And what does that mean? What does it mean to have a best friend at work?
Well, what does it mean to have a best friend? The best friend is someone you go to and you can say, I'm having a great day today, or I'm having a really crappy day, and here's why. And I can share these things with you, and you aren't going to turn around and use these things against me at the first moment that you can. It's the person you can go to and say, I'm not really sure how to do this. Can you help me? Or do you have any insight into this? And I can be vulnerable and open with you. And that's a safe thing to do. And it does matter. And it does matter at work, because when you have, I mean, think about it. This is the place where we spend most of our time for the better part of 30 or more years of our lives. If we don't have that close connection at work, we are less likely to do our best work. We're less likely to help others be and do their best at work. And if we're not doing our best, we're not helping others do their best, it's like this slippery slope where over time, that means the company's not getting their best from a heck of a lot of people. And so there's a big chunk of lost productivity there overall. It's just that's the whole slippery, cloudy space of employee engagement. And there's just, it's a whole lost opportunity.
Yeah, and one of the things that you espouse is to help kind of move this along, if you will, is social connections and making sure we have good social connections within the workplace. But I would imagine there's people who are thinking, bosses, leaders especially, I don't need to be friends with my employees. Like, I'm their boss, I'm their manager, I'm their leader, whatever they call themselves. I don't need to be their friend. How do you handle those objections when you hear them?
Well, the easiest thing for me to say is, yep, and how's that working for you? I'm willing to bet if we went into that company and did a deep dive and talked to people right now, they're not doing well. That team is not functioning at a high level. That whatever's happening right there, they're not doing well. We could go in and gather the data, and the data would speak for itself. Or if they are doing well, there is some area of missed opportunity in there right now. But I'd go to Vegas on it.
You talk about in your book the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and how kind of the middle of those needs is really missing. Can you talk a little bit about just the, what is that middle of Maslow's hierarchy?
So, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, we have basic human needs, but smack dab in the middle is love and belonging. And, you know, Maslow never said, hey, everybody, this is just all for your personal life. But, you know, when you go to work every day, take that love and belonging out of the middle of the pyramid and you're good to go. Like, you'll be super successful. So at work, we need that love and belonging. We need that sense of family and community at work just as much as we do at home and in our personal lives. And so the challenge for work is, how are we building that sense of love and belonging on our teams and with our coworkers and with our bosses and across our companies? And that's where friendship comes in. And that's where building strong workplace friendships and driving great mentor relationships and having really great human leaders all comes into play. It all plays into driving that sense of love and belonging in our workplace.
Yeah, and some people are going to hear this and go, love and belonging at work, come on, what's that all about, right? But
she's such a mush, yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting you just said it that way, because when I read that and I looked through the pyramid, I immediately said, this is like the case for more women leaders to help balance out all these male egos of go get the numbers, you know, and that's like all we care about. But to kind of highlight that, and then also to move into the next piece of friendship, mentorship, why do you feel mentors are super important within the workplace?
Mentorship takes a lot of different forms, but there are so many skills that any of us can be working on at any given time. But mentorship in the workplace has the ability to solve one of the workplace's biggest problems, which is inclusion, in a really organic way. So if we could teach people how to reach out to other people in the workplace in a way where we say, hey, all right, you're trying to build and develop this skill. I know someone who's really good at this. So one, here's the driving of self-awareness piece. Right? So I have to figure out what it is I need to develop. So I'm working on my level of self-awareness. So that's really good. When I figure out what that is, and maybe my boss or someone in HR can help me with that, then my boss or someone in HR can say, hey, I know that someone in this other department is really good at this. And by the way, we're going to start finding ways to match you up with people who don't look exactly like you, or maybe they are a little older or a little younger, but we're going to start putting people together who are different in some way. And now we're going to get to know people who are different from us because they don't look exactly like us. And you're going to learn about a different culture or a different age group or something at the same time that you're building a skill. And so now we're driving some inclusion in the workplace too. And this is a way to develop skills, drive inclusion, put people together with a really deep purpose behind it, instead of, oh, hey, you've worked here for 30 years and you're brand new. Why don't you guys get together and be mentors and show each other where the restrooms and the Keurig machine is? Because that's great. Mm-hmm. It does nothing. But there could be some really deep purpose behind mentoring that works for both mentors and mentees. And then mentees become champions of their mentors because they get to know each other and they're building relationships in a professional way. They become champions of their mentors who are on leadership paths, maybe to higher levels in leadership. And they're driving relationships across different departments. I mean, there's so many different things that good mentorships can do in an organization to break down silos, just multiple benefits that go to really purposeful mentor structures in companies.
Yeah, I mean, mentorship, I think, ties, if you know, when done correctly, as you described it, it mm-hmm. really helps also with the social connections, building some friendships at work. It really ties the two together. But like yourself, I mean, I've seen it done poorly, which is, hey, this person's going to be your mentor, get on their schedule. And then you get to the meeting and they're like, hey, what do you want to talk about? You know, there's no structure or anything behind it. And it's just like, we did the program because we felt like we were supposed to, but we really didn't want to see it we didn't know what to expect from it. So they just said, we'll just be mentors. And then it fizzled out so fast after that.
Yes. And everybody's so worried about time, which I understand. And so then we think, oh, these have to be like 2 hour long meetings each month. And it really doesn't have to be that complicated. It could be 15 minutes over coffee. It could be 30 minutes over lunch. So people avoid what they think is going to be really complicated. And so if we could give folks a simple structure and some basic guidelines and some basic responsibilities, like, hey, mentees, it's your responsibility to drive an agenda and tell mentors what you need from them. Come prepared with questions. We'll give you some forms and some structure to help get this relationship going, but the onus is on you. And we're here to help you. We need to make this workable. Otherwise, people avoid what feels like it's too complicated when they are overwhelmed with work to begin with. But this is doable, and we can make it happen, and we can make it really good with identifiable outcomes.
And you said something about self-awareness, which I think is really huge. Like, most people are just, I'm sure you know, are not self-aware. So when it comes to leadership, the third component here, how important is self-awareness to being a good leader?
For me, it's one of the top three characteristics of a great leader. You can't be a great leader. You can be a leader, but you can't be a great leader without a high level of self-awareness.
And for people who are going, I've heard of self-awareness. Like, how do I become more self-aware? How do people can do that? Are there tools or things they can use?
Yeah, there are tons of tools. So you can, a simple Google search will give you tons of options. But one of my favorites is a book by Travis Bradbury, Emotional Intelligence 2.0. It's one of my favorites out there. Comes with an assessment, and that's a great way to dive into it. One of the easiest things you can do is, if you think you have an idea of what your strengths and weaknesses are, jot them down and then go talk to somebody and say, this is what I think I'm good at. This is what I think I have a handle on. And this is where I think I might not be so strong. And go to a peer, go to a family member, go to your boss and say, what do you think about how I candidly assessed myself? And be prepared to accept the feedback. So be really open to it. And being open to it means don't respond to everything the person says in the moment. Take some notes, be thoughtful, say thank you, and then go back and really reflect on that feedback. And think about it, and then go back to it the next day and really reflect on it again. And then from that, say, okay, this is where I thought I was. This is where people are telling me I am. Now what do I think about it? Another option, if you have the ability, is to do a 360 review. Mm. And a 360 is another tool. It's an electronic assessment that someone can send around to folks in your company. And they assess you on a variety of characteristics, from communication to delegation and everything in between. And it's anonymous feedback. And I encourage you to treat it as anonymous, which means don't try to figure out in the comments section of it who said what. take the anonymous feedback is only as good as people who are willing to complete it. So don't try to figure out who's saying what. Encourage people to be truly honest in their feedback. And appreciate it and reflect on it.
Yeah, it almost sounds like when you become more self-aware, you start to hold yourself more accountable.
Yes, you have to be open to the feedback and treat it as a gift, because it is, when people are willing to be honest with you. And then you have the ability to say, I'm going to pick one or two things, and I'm going to really focus on these one or two things for the next 6 months. And I'm going to do my best to improve in these one or two areas. Oh, and by the way, I think it's super great that people think I'm really good at these one or two things. I'm going to make sure I continue to harness these two things that I'm really good at. So what are the ways I can, harness the crap out of these, and how might I be able to help other people? I'm going to let people know that they thought I was really good at these two things. So if anybody needs help in these areas, I'm going to offer myself up, to help others in these areas.
All right. One more question on your book, and then I'm gonna start to wrap things up. But we've been talking leadership, the third component here, and we've covered self-awareness and how you need to hold yourself accountable. But you also have a section on communication, which you believe is a good component of a leader. And rather than get into how communication as a technical communication thing, I'm curious. You recommend that companies should stop doing performance reviews because that's not the greatest place where they do communication well. What should they do instead?
Yeah. Yeah. So ironically, as a former attorney, I think performance reviews are just really antiquated. If people would have more conversations on a regular basis, I think performance reviews could be a thing of the past. Now, look, the attorney in me says there needs to be some sort of record of conversations. I get it. But there, if leaders and their employees were having regular conversations, monthly one-to-ones at a minimum, or quarterly conversations at a bare minimum, and people always knew where they stood, and they had goals, and they were regularly discussing their progress against their goals and making adjustments where they needed to, a performance review would essentially become a thing of the past. There would be no need to sit down and have all of this negative anticipation over, am I going to be rated a 1 or a 5? And what's my salary increase or decrease or bonus stuff going to be? Regular conversations.
I love that, because if you really think about it, it ties everything together. If I'm having regular conversations with people, I'm having social connections with them, I might be creating some friendships or relationships at work, I might actually start to look at someone who, is having these conversations with me as a mentor, which could also, if they're honest conversations, right, it could make me more self-aware, which is that I could hold myself more accountable for, and then I can go out and start having more better communications with others as well.
Yeah. And look, there's a reason that friendship comes first, that leads to mentorship and then leadership, because if you have the foundational relationship first, the leadership piece of it should be a whole lot easier because you have the foundations of respect, trust, and loyalty. The conversation should be much easier because people know that you actually do care about them and that you're having the conversations because you care and not because you're trying to do something to thwart them in some way or another, that it's all coming from a good place. And so, yeah, I'm going to have a tough conversation with you because I care about you and I need to have this conversation because I'm looking out for you. And here are the things you need to do to get better. And I'm here to help you do that. So let's do this.
Yeah.
Right? It's a much better conversation than you have 60 days to improve or there's the door.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So speaking of conversations, you are getting ready to launch a podcast where you will be having conversations with others. Can you tell me about your podcast? What's it called? And when can we expect to see it?
It is called the Frontiership Podcast. And I'm currently in the works recording episodes, and it's going to launch this spring. So I'm targeting April 1st. Going through the editing process right now, going through the recording and editing process right now, and realizing that as a solo, everything seems more complicated than when I first start out to do things. But I'm really excited because I'm connecting with great people who are sharing their career journeys, their mistakes, their celebrations, the people who've been the most influential in their lives, their mentors, and now their leadership stories and their company journeys. So it's all about their friends, mentors, and leaders. And I'm really excited to have other people share what friendship means to them over the course of their career and now in their companies.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I'm excited for it to come out. So as usual, all good things must come to an end. So Claudia, for those who are interested in learning more about you, what you do, learning more about Vistage, they want to pick up a copy of your book or find out when your podcast is officially released, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch with you?
My email is claudiawilliams@humanzonebiz.com, or you can check me out at humanzonebiz.com or frontiership.com.
Awesome. Any final thoughts words of wisdom, tips, anything you'd like to pass on to anybody that's listening today?
Gosh, I would just say, you know, business is personal and relationships do matter. And so everything we talked about, you know, it's not only about the relationships we're building in the workplace, but all of this stuff is about how we're connecting with our clients, customers, vendors. It's for everything. So thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for being a guest today. I think everybody should go pick up your book. Whether you're in a leadership position or not, check it out. It's a really good book. And thank you again for being a guest today.
Thank you.
Today's show was edited and produced by Ryan Rosen. The Vacation Question music is The Tie-In Trentalana by Infinity Music and was purchased via audiojungle.com. The theme music is called Hudson Hawk by Neon Beach. And the LinkedIn Made Simple ad is Jimmy Two Times by Dresden the Flamingo. Licenses for these songs were purchased via soundstripe.com.